Today's episode is sponsored in part by Kajabi, LinkedIn, Yahoo Finance, and Rakuten. Kajabi gives you control of your content, brand, and income. Get a 30-day free trial to start your course at kajabi.com/profiting. Reach top-level decision makers by advertising on LinkedIn. Go to linkedin.com/yap for a $100 credit on your next campaign. Yahoo Finance is the number one financial destination. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. Get cash back on every purchase with Rakuten, the smarter way to shop and save. Start all of your shopping trips at rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. As always, you can find all of our incredible deals in the show notes.
Money is something you exchange hours of your life for. You exchange your time for. If I'm exchanging my time for money, which represents time that can buy other things, other people's time, I need to be in touch with my values, like what I want out of my life. And realizing that some of the things that I can buy, I won't be actually able to use as I'm older. When I spend this money and how I spend this money matters just as much as what I want the money for.
Bill Perkins.
He's CEO and head trader at Schuyler Capital Management.
Hedge fund manager, epic investor.
He's out with a new book today. It's called Die with Zero. Is also an energy trader and high stakes poker player.
It's just logic that you would want to spend all your money before you die. I don't want to go working at something to acquire capital or money to never use it. You want to get the reward for giving up hours of your life. The question is, when do you spend the money? Do you spend it all tomorrow? Do you spend it all at 86? Money is useless to you when you're a baby, and it's pretty much useless to you on your deathbed. How should you be spending your money down, during what periods, and how your values affect that? Like, what are the mental models to help you decide how to allocate your wealth, your health, and your time so that you don't have any regrets when you die? What you're missing out is...
Young and Profiters, our whole lives, we've been told to save our pennies. Save our pennies for a rainy day, for when we're old and gray. But what if I told you the goal should not be saving millions or billions of dollars when you die, but the goal should be to die with zero? It sounds pretty crazy, and it's not something we hear often, but that's exactly what my guest today, Bill Perkins, believes. Bill Perkins is one of the world's most famous and successful energy traders, and he's made a lot of money in his life. And he spent a lot of money because he's all about living an enriched, fulfilling life in the now. He believes that waiting until you're 70, 80, 90 to spend your money doesn't make a lot of sense because money doesn't have the same utility at that age. Well, this was definitely a really inspiring conversation. It helped me think a lot differently about how I should be spending my money and when. So I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Without further delay, here's my conversation with Bill Perkins. Bill, welcome to Young and Profiting Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this interview. I feel like you're going to give a lot of value to my listeners. So you are actually considered one of the most successful energy traders in history, but you actually have worn a lot of different hats over the years. Energy trader, investor, art collector, poker player, just to name a few. So curious to understand what hats you wear today and how you would describe the work that you do.
I'm a husband. I'm a father. I run a hedge fund. I have two startups. I have things that I'm curious about and I'm interested in, and I do those things. I like to wake surf. I like to travel. I like to learn about new cultures, different worldviews, different perspectives. I'm just like everybody else trying to answer the universal why. Why are we here? What can we learn about ourselves and our journey?
That's awesome. And so now you're really huge in the finance world, like I was saying. But you originally went to school to be an engineer. So talk to us about why you first decided to get into finance and pivot into the finance world.
I don't know if I'm really huge, but I would say that I was in school for engineering. I wanted to learn engineering, but it's not something I wanted to do. It wasn't a life journey that I wanted to have, but it was something that I was interested in. And that was something that I figured out at a career fair that was like, oh, this seems like hell, this job progression and promotion, et cetera. I didn't really want to go through that. What I did want to become was rich. I wanted to have options and I wanted to have choices. Like most people, I didn't really figure out what I wanted to do. I just knew what I wanted to be and I wanted to have that freedom. And financial freedom was very attractive and alluring to me. And so I wound up in commodity trading.
And so, like I said, you didn't really have a finance background when you first got your foot in the door. And I thought your story was really inspiring of how you basically persisted to get an opportunity in finance. Can you tell us about that?
I got a chance to be assistant peon on the New York Mercantile Exchange floor when it was open outcry. But they were really trying to hire someone else. I just kept showing up and waiting downstairs. And are you going to take me? You're going to take me. And eventually I got the job as assistant peon. And when I got to the exchange floor, I had fallen in love with it. It was a casual atmosphere. It was chaos. There was reason, logic, applied math, but not so heavy that it would be grueling. That's when I started turning things around and realized that I really wanted to apply myself and I really wanted to get ahead in this field because this field offered what I considered a very reasonable chance at being rich.
So I love working for free. Back in the day when I was in my 20s, I worked for free at a radio station for 3 years. And now fast forward 10 years later, I'm the podcast princess, top 100 podcast.
You're crushing it.
Yeah. And it's because, you know, I gained a lot of experience younger, almost my whole 20s. I either worked for really cheap or worked for free and just got a ton of experience. So I'd love to hear from you. What were those early years like in terms of how you lived, some of the sacrifices that you made? Because you were basically working for cheap to gain experience.
You're investing in yourself. You may not look at it that way, but you are. You're absorbing information from people who have gone through it around you. You're in the room. You're learning firsthand. And yes, it's not for riches and gold while you're grinding it out at that point. What you're doing is you're integrating lots of information. You're going to leisure learning classes at night. You're absorbing as much as you can, and you're investing in yourself, which is one of the greatest investments you can make. And so that as you become more proficient, you understand what's going on and you fuse your own ideas into that field and your own personality or your own take or your own wisdom, you are able to take off and you have a better shot at success later in life. And so when you go to school, you invest in yourself. You're getting an education and you're investing in yourself. I went through the school of life in this career called commodities. You went through the school of life in broadcasting and journalism and entertainment. And so these things paid off for you. And they often do. They don't always do, but they often do. And life is about taking risks. And if I'm going to take a risk, one of the biggest investments I want to make is in myself.
And speaking of taking a risk, you ended up going to Texas to take your career to the next level. And you became a millionaire before the age of 30. So I'd love to hear your advice for other young and profiters listening that want to be a millionaire by 30 or 40. What do you think they should do?
I often tell people there's so many different fields. For every field you can think of, there's a millionaire in that field. So one of the things is to pick the field that you really are going to put in the effort and you're going to enjoy enough to actually do the thing to become a millionaire, whatever that is, whether it's in, I don't know, waste disposal, environment, trading, podcasting, whatever it may be. The second thing is, why do you want to become a millionaire? I don't advise people putting hours and sacrificing the time to acquire money that they're not going to spend. So what is the why you want to become a millionaire? The base level is I want freedom and I want to be able to pay my bills, et cetera. But if you live, I don't know, in Denison, Iowa, where there's not that much to do and the housing costs are really low, et cetera, do you really need to be sacrificing your life doing this job in order to acquire the money to have the life? Maybe you don't. Maybe you can have that life without the money or that level of money. And so that's one other piece of advice I give people is why. Know the why.
I think that's really good advice. So we have a lot of listeners that are looking for new careers. They're young. They're curious. A lot of people probably don't know what a commodities trader is or a commodities hedge fund. Can you explain what it is a bit? What are some of the things that people do in that type of a role?
Essentially, we're speculators. We speculate on things like the price of oil, the price of natural gas, the price of corn, the price of wheat. We take in all the information available to us and we do, with my firm, we do fundamental analysis and we figure out what supply and demand is and where prices will go in the future. When we're right, we're rewarded. And when we're wrong, we often get kicked in the teeth, as we like to say. But on average, we're a positive expected outcome. We're able to make money for our investors and ourselves. And so it's a lot of homework and a lot of studying in order to figure out what prices will do in the future. Not too dissimilar from stock trading.
With your career, you did really well because you were known for taking really calculated risks, and then you won big with those risks. Can you tell us some examples of you doing that?
All of us in our field, there are a lot of successful people in commodity trading that are fundamental traders. A lot of times, people who are on the side who are indifferent to what happens to pricing as long as they hedge. For example, if you're a natural gas producer and the forward market, somebody's willing to pay you $3 in the forward market, you will sell it. You don't care if the price goes up or down. You're going to make money because it only costs you, say, 50, 70 cents to make it, right? And we're speculating that it would go up. A lot of times in our market, there is only a certain amount of storage and we can run out of storage and prices can drop precipitously. A lot of my earnings over my career have been betting on prices going down, not actually up, because I believe in the ingenuity and the productivity of Americans. And so generally, we tend to overproduce. We tend to get better and better at producing something cheaper and cheaper, and we don't grow storage as fast. And so we have things, what are called containment, and prices collapse. Though it's a risky position to be betting on something going down, right? There's a lot of disruption, a lot of things can have it go up. But fortunately, I was more right than I was wrong and was able to be successful at it.
And what drove you in this career? It seems like an exciting thing to like bet on things. Would you say that's true?
I was very delusional when I was young. And like most young males, I did it for the opposite sex, right? I wanted to be rich and famous and have all the girls love me and that type of thing. And as you get older, and you start to ask yourself, well, why, aside from hedonistic pursuits, why am I doing this? What is this money going to be afford me? It's like, now that I can afford these things, what of these things do I really want in life? And so I think the reasons why I got into it, like just to be rich, got a little bit more developed and more meaningful as I got older and I started asking the deeper questions of myself.
So one of the things that you got into as you were older is poker. And you end up being, I think, a professional poker player, or at least...
Definitely not professional.
Not professional, but at least doing some notable poker playing, right?
Yeah. Yes. In my job, I'm not allowed to gamble. It may look like I'm gambling, but I'm not. I'm making very detailed, positive expected outcome bets, a series of them. Poker is risk adjacent and is an imperfect information game. And when I first got into poker, I looked at it as, this is my entertainment to go gamble and play. Obviously, it's a very strategic game. And the people that are professionals, they're taking lots of positive expected outcome bets. They're not going, oh, let me just bluff just because. Let me experiment. They actually know what's going on. And so later in my, let's say, poker career, quote unquote career, you know, I treated it a lot more seriously and played larger events and started doing well in tournament play.
So something that I thought was really interesting with your poker playing and all the risks that you've taken, you talk about something called CFRM, counterfactual regret minimization models. So I thought it'd be fun for you to tell us what that was and the traditional ways that people use it, and then how that's related to your new book.
It's essentially what if analysis, right? If I do this, is this the best outcome if this happens, in a series of them, so that you have the least regret. When you play a chess computer, it's a CFRM for not losing in chess, for not being checkmated and checkmating you. In poker, it's what decision leads to the highest probability of me making money, right? Whether that's bluffing, folding, going all to the river, calling. In life, it's, for me, what I look at is, what is the behavior or set of behaviors that is going to lead to the least amount of regret in the future? And I'm solving for happiness, right? I'm solving for fulfillment. And so they're very simple examples. Should I go play poker with the fellas or should I go on a walk with my daughter? Should I call my mom and go visit mom or should I go raging out in Vegas, right? You know, I'm using some stark examples, but they're smaller examples. And the question is your future self, will you have regret of your earlier self, of your earlier actions? And so, you know, my biggest fear is not running out of money. You can tell by the risk I've taken and the decisions I make. The biggest fear I have is wasting my life or any particular period in my life. And so I wanted to come up with a counterfactual regret minimization algorithm for not wasting my life based on whatever my values are, and basically make it value agnostic. So what are your values? What's the algorithm, right? Plug in your values. What are the algorithm? What are we solving for? So when you're at work, we're solving for the most money or the most yield or the most whatever it is. When you're in a relationship, you're solving for the best relationship. What behaviors, what should I be doing to have the best, most meaningful relationship, right? With our health, what food should I be eating for the optimum health, right? Optimal lifespan, and balancing it out with, okay, I also have a regret minimization. I don't want to eat nasty. You know what I mean? I don't want to eat nasty foods, right? And so I wanted to come up for this ultimate regret minimization program, mental model, so that I did not waste my life. Because that's the real thing I don't want to waste. I can waste money. I just don't want to waste my life.
I read a lot of books because this is my job as a podcaster, at least one of my jobs. And I loved your book. I think it was really fresh. It had a lot of new ideas. It's called Die with Zero. And one of the things that you just alluded to is that you spend a lot of money. In fact, your friends call you an honorary billionaire because you spend like a billionaire, but you're not exactly a billionaire yet. So can you talk to us about some of the ways that you're spending your money and how you first came up with the idea that you wanted to die with zero?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, it wasn't all at once. It was reading books and thinking about the question, like, how am I going to get the most out of this life? You know, in the beginning of this podcast, you said you were a millionaire before you're 30. And a lot of people are like, I want to have X before I'm X age. Usually it's 30 or 25. And what they're saying is intuitively, they know that the value of that money to them at 90 or 86, et cetera, is less, right? Nobody says like, I want to make $1 billion by age 90. It doesn't come out of people's mouth. Or I want to have $10 million by age 86. It doesn't come out of people's mouth because they intuitively know that their body is decaying, their attitudes are shifting, their life has passed them by, and the money has less utility to them. And so when I was younger, I read this book called Your Money or Your Life, which completely changed my view of what money is and the definition of it. And the biggest thing is, the best definition is this: money is something you exchange hours of your life for, you exchange your time for. And we're both exchanging hours of our time. And I realized, okay, if I'm exchanging my time for money, which represents time that can buy other things, other people's time, whether it be the pilot's time to take me on a trip or the doctor's time to save me or whatever, I need to be in touch with my values, like what I want out of my life. And realizing that some of the things that I can buy, I won't be actually able to use as I'm older. When I spend this money and how I spend this money matters just as much as what I want the money for. And so that sent me on a tizzy about, wait a minute, I don't want to give up hours of my life to then have no reward. I don't want to go working at something to acquire capital or money to never use it. And that didn't make any sense. So to me, it's just logic that you would want to spend all your money before you die. You want to get the reward for giving up hours of your life. And then the question is, okay, when do you spend the money? Do you spend it all tomorrow? No. Do you spend it all at 86? No. So clearly, there's some sort of curve. Money is useless to you when you're a baby. You just gum it. And it's pretty much useless to you on your deathbed. So it has this kind of increasing utility and declining utility. And it was kind of figuring out, when is the maximum utility? How should you be spending your money down during what periods, and how your values affect that, right? How your health impacts that. And so I wrestled with that for many, many years. And eventually it became the book that you're reading. What are the mental models to help you decide how to allocate your wealth, your health, and your time so that you don't have any regrets when you die?
Let's hold that thought and take a quick break with our sponsors.
Young and Profiters, they may call me the podcast princess, but I'm also the LinkedIn queen. I've been a LinkedIn influencer for 6 years now, and I teach one of the most popular courses about LinkedIn. And I love to teach sales on LinkedIn, because when it comes to B2B sales, LinkedIn has got that on lock. LinkedIn is where all the decision makers are hanging out. There are 180 million senior level decision makers on LinkedIn and 10 million C-suite decision makers. These people are on LinkedIn and they're in the mode to buy. They're using LinkedIn for their buying journey, to research vendors or sales reps that they might work with, to look up how to solve their problems,
to learn from industry thought leaders. They are in the mode to buy, whereas on other platforms, they're in the mode to be entertained. You want to get them in the right mindset. You want to cut through the noise with LinkedIn ads. In fact, 79% of B2B marketers rate LinkedIn as their top channel for paid media. And LinkedIn has the best targeting because they've got all these different inputs. People are putting their resume basically up on there. And so there's so many keywords that they can use to target the right decision makers so they can hear about how you solve their problems. And I've got a special gift for all you young and profiters who want to try LinkedIn ads. You can get $100 credit. LinkedIn was super generous. If you want to make B2B marketing everything it can be and get $100 credit on your next campaign, go to linkedin.com/yap, Y-A-P. Again, if you want to claim your credit, go to linkedin.com/yap. Terms and conditions apply. Young and profiters, as you may know, I launched my LinkedIn Secrets Masterclass a little bit over a year ago. It was my first course. And so far, I've generated well over $500,000. And the best part is, I didn't have to figure out how to set up my mastermind subscriptions, how to do abandoned cart targeting, and all of that tech geeky stuff. I just left that all to Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And if you're in that, I need to sell more with less stage, Shopify Magic is your AI superpowered sidekick ready to whip up captivating content that converts. And it doesn't matter if you're selling digital products or vegan cosmetics. Shopify helps you sell anything, anywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Stop those online window shoppers in their tracks and turn them into loyal customers with the internet's best converting checkout. I'm talking 36% better on average compared to the other options out there. It's no wonder Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, including huge global brands like Allbirds and Thrive Cosmetics. It took me a day to set up my Shopify store. I set up chat, took 2 minutes, and I was done. 1 month from thinking of the idea to implementation, a year later, I've made $500,000 on the idea. That's what it takes in 2024, just a good idea. And then utilizing a platform like Shopify that can help you make it a reality. There is no excuse these days. If you've got a good business idea and you think you'll be a good entrepreneur, you don't have to wait any longer. You don't have to be super techie. And you never have to worry about figuring it out on your own. Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/profiting. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/profiting now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/profiting. Young and profiters, I'm about to be jet setting all over the world. I'm going to London, Cancun, New Orleans, and New York to speak. I'm going to be up there with the bright lights and I want to be spiffy. I want to look fresh. And so I'm going on a big shopping spree. I got to get clothes. I got to get hair stuff, skincare stuff, makeup. But I'm not going to feel guilty about this shopping spree because Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Rakuten is the shopping platform for savvy savers. From May 6th to May 13th, they're having their biggest cashback event of the year. I'm talking about 15% cashback at hundreds of stores with additional cashback bonuses. And they've got so many stores participating in their Big Give Week. So when it comes to clothes, I'm looking at Splendid and Good American. And when it comes to beauty, they've got so many good stores participating. They've got Ulta, Fenty, Bobbi Brown, Blue Mercury, and all the products that we love. Now we can get cash back. It's like getting a discount on the stuff you're going to buy anyway. It's absolutely amazing. They even have travel brands. So that's going to be super convenient for me with all my upcoming trips. Expedia, Hotels.com. You can get deals on everything from electronics to home goods to travel and beauty. Young and profiters, you're going to want to grab this limited time deal with both hands. You get high cashback rates for only 8 days. So hurry. Membership is free. And when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cashback boost. That's an extra 10% cashback on top of the 15% cashback. You won't see higher cashback rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app at R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it. One of the most thought-provoking ideas that I saw in your book was this idea of you saving when you're younger is actually starving your younger self who needs the money, and you're trying to help your older self who's probably making a lot more money. So like in your 20s, if you start saving too much, you're actually hurting yourself because your older self is going to have more money than you do now. Can you talk us through that?
I read that Your Money or Your Life, and that book started what's called the FIRE movement, the Financial Independence or Retire Early movement, which is about extreme frugality in order to not have to work later on in life. And one day my boss overheard me talking about how much money I had saved. I was quite proud of it. And he called me a fucking idiot. He says, you didn't come here to make the type of money. You came here to make millions and your salary is going to grow. Why go out and spend that money? I was essentially borrowing from my poorer self to give money to my future richer self, which didn't make sense. And economists call this income smoothing in order to do that. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Actually, I swung too far the other way. I started spending money like crazy. But as I was seesawing, I was coming up with this idea of what is the optimum amount to save and what is the optimum amount to spend? Without going into like, there's tons of books on different rules and different allocations. The concept is more important than the exact details, depending on who you are. It's certain periods of your life, you're going to have more health and more time than wealth. And certain periods of your life, you're going to have more wealth than health and time, and vice versa. Those three variables are going to change throughout your life. And how they interplay now and in the future kind of determines what you do and how you allocate those resources. And so a lot of younger people save their way out of a great life, those that do save. You don't think about what experiences should happen in my 20s. What experience should happen in my 30s? What experience should happen in my 40s, 50s, and so on? And some of these things, like if you're young, backpacking through Europe with your friends, you know, I talk about my book that I didn't do that I regret to this day, going raging, going dates, certain trips, certain activities are optimal in your 20s that are not optimal in your 30s, and vice versa. And so you don't want to save so much that you save yourself out of a life.
I love that. And just drilling on this concept a little deeper, you talk about this fable, the ant and the grasshopper. Can you tell us what you personally took away from that story?
The story of the ant and the grasshopper, it talks about the ant who work all day and, you know, gather food and store it for the winter. And the grasshopper just fiddles and plays all day. And when the winter comes, you can see what happens to the grasshopper. You know, he dies and the ants, you know, they have food. But if the ants are working all their life and working every single summer, when do they ever get to play? The end of the story is there's a time for work and a time for play. But the visualization of the grasshopper freezing is what a lot of people take away. It's like, oh my God, I must save and I must always save and I must always save. I must be like the ant. But if the ant goes through his life every summer, when does it ever get to play? Right? And so where's that balance? A lot of people talk about balance. And that's really not a life worth living. There's no amount of money you can pay me at this age to do 10 years in Sing Sing, right? Because I would just be giving up my life. And so some people, there's a small segment out there that they're essentially doing the same thing for some future selves. They're basically saying, F you to their current selves, and I'm going to give all my money to the future me. And then the future them is going to look back and be like, I'm kind of pissed at you because these experiences that make life worth living and the memories associated with those experiences that I would be living off, you robbed me of those. And so balancing current you with future you on a continuous basis is what the book is about.
I see it all the time. I meet so many successful people, a lot of people in the finance space that speak about it, who advocate to be extremely frugal, where they're making $1 million a year or millions of dollars a year, and they're buying the most low budget airplane ticket, for example, or something like that. Like, they just like to live frugal. But to your point, they might be missing out on some experiences. And I know that you drill down on experiences specifically as something that we should prioritize when it comes to spending our money. Why experiences over other things like possessions?
Yeah, and an experience doesn't have to be a trip or something that costs money. It could be like going to the park and hiking with a friend. Essentially, the summation of your experiences are who you are, right? Your self-concept, et cetera. And I'm using it in the broadest sense, whether those are charitable experiences, hedonistic experiences, experiences that cost money, experiences that do not cost money. But what they're missing out is they're optimizing for money, and I'm optimizing for a full life. So the money is a tool, it's not the goal. The money is a tool to drive fulfillment. My health is a tool to drive fulfillment. My time is a tool to drive fulfillment. And these, how these changes, how the interplant, they are always in service of my fulfillment. Listen, if being cheap and not going here and not doing these things and not having the experiences and staying in a room and meditating all the time, if that drives your fulfillment, I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. But what I do is ask people is get off autopilot and really think about what are the things and activities that drive your fulfillment? What experiences drive your fulfillment? Then look at the resources you have and layer it on such that at the end of your life, you've used all your resources and you've had the most fulfilling life possible. So delayed gratification at the extreme is no gratification. And so I think a lot of people have this idea of delayed gratification for its own sake. It becomes a habit. Habits are tough to break, and they habituate themselves out of a life. And that's what I try and get people to reframe their thinking about, what are these resources for? They're just tools, and they're tools to drive your fulfillment.
Well, let's talk about saving, because one thing that I'm a little bit curious about is your opinion on saving. I have a lot of people that come on the show, and they say really scary stats, like the average American has less than $1,000 in their emergency fund, or the average American has only saved $60,000, or whatever the stats are. They come on with really scary stats, and they talk to us about the importance of saving a lot of the time. So can you talk to us about how much is too much to save, or maybe some of the thought process that we should take around saving?
I think what we have, particularly in the United States, maybe not so much in other countries, but the United States has an epidemic of being on autopilot. And so a lot of the book focuses on the autopilot of people who are those who save too much and save themselves out of a life. But there's the other side of the autopilot where people are consuming themselves out of a life. They're actually saying everything for current me and F you to future me. And they're actually consuming things and buying things that really don't fulfill them. And they're also doing it inefficiently. They might even be consuming things that, do I really need a $60,000 car, or could I buy a brand new $14,000 car model? Or is it my just ego buying? Am I buying the statusism? Do I really need this brand of clothing, or do you need X, Y, and Z? Finance is so personal, because if I was in heaven before I came down and I sat with God and I said, these are all the experiences I want to have on earth, then I would know exactly to the penny how much money I needed and at what time, what my savings rate should be, et cetera. Right now, we come on life and we discover what we want. We go to school, we learn, we explore the world, we discover. And so there's this poker effect where it's an imperfect information game where you don't even know what you're going to like, right? And you don't know that things happen. So there is some sort of savings rate that needs to happen, right? Some of the things you do know you want, like I want to pay my bills, I want to have food, shelter, and clothing. After that, what you want to do, the things you like and you enjoy, this may not be as well known. You just kind of generally have an idea. And so I think people on autopilot the other way are caught in consumption mentality, purchasing things that they don't need or inefficiently purchasing, and somewhat saying F you to their future selves. You know, lots of reasons why that exists. I don't want to go into every single reason that may exist, but it's pervasive here. It's more pervasive here in America, say, than in Japan.
In terms of saving too much.
Yeah, in terms of saving, it's the exact opposite, right? So Japan is like, everybody saves, they give their money to the next generation, they save, they give it to the next generation. And I'm like, they have generational non-fulfillment.
Generational non-fulfillment.
Nobody ever parties, right? Like they just keep dying and passing the money off, right? Like they're not, or how about this? Not non-fulfillment, suboptimal fulfillment, right? Not the most fulfilling lives that they could have.
Yeah, because to your point, a lot of people might counteract what you're saying with, well, if I die with a lot, my kids get it, I can give it to charity. What do you have to say to them?
Well, I say it's suboptimal, right? You reach mental maturity around 28 and in terms of calculation power, and physical maturity at 33, and then you're in plateau and decline. And so the same laws of physics that govern my body will govern my kid's body and governs everybody else's body. And so the utility of money for them declines just like it declines for you. So when you die, and let's say you're 86, people are having kids later, but your kids are 60. They're not kids, okay? Most of their useful life has passed them by. They've lived 60 years and they probably have 20 years left to 26 years left. And so that is not the suboptimal way or deliberate way to be thinking about your kids. If you're going to give money to your kids, it's much more optimal to give them the money between 28 and 33 than it is to willy-nilly, what I don't really think about my life. I don't really plan my life. I'm not really optimizing for fulfillment, but whatever I die with, it'll just go to my kids. That's not really thinking about your kids. That's not planning. That's not deliberate. That's not intentional. It's kind of asinine, if you ask me.
Yeah. To me, this is so smart. And this is something that I've never really heard of, this concept in your book called the peak utility of using your money. Can you talk to us about our true golden years?
There's this trade-off where you have your health and that's starting to plateau and decline. And then you have this rising wealth from you're getting more experience, you're making money, things become easy, you develop habits at work. Like I'm pretty sure when you first started podcasting, it was hard and what question should I ask? And now it's like driving home. You don't even know how you got home, right? You're a wizard. And so that makes you more profitable and more likable and you make more money. But yet, as you're making more and more money, as you get older, your ability to use that money, because hey, you're not gonna go heli-skiing at 70 on average, right? There are certain activities that become less enjoyable. Actually walking 7 miles without hurting your knees or back may become less enjoyable. So when you go on a trip, you get less of that city. You don't do as many activities in that city. That means you don't spend as much money in that city. You actually don't eat as much food as that city. You don't, et cetera. And so when you aggregate all these things, I'm giving specific examples, but in aggregate, you realize that there is a time in your life where that money and that rising wealth, no matter how much more money you make, you actually don't get more utility. And so you have this golden years. And a lot of people think the golden years are the period arbitrarily set by the US government when they were setting up Social Security. And if you look at people's health and their wealth, the real golden years are like in your 40s and 50s, not in your 60s. That's the period where you largely have the health to do many of the activities that you've always been able to do, but a lot of them are disappearing. I can tell you 40 years out there that were former athletes, like, no, I can't do that anymore. I'll tailor hamstring, et cetera, right? But you have the money to actually do it. And so that is the golden years. That is years where you're spending your activities, your wealth in order to afford these activities, and your health, your ability to do these activities are at their kind of like their peak. And that is when you're really increasing the velocity of money through your account and to other people's pockets in order to provide you with these experiences and services that will fulfill you.
I really like this. And you say that we should put our lives into time buckets or plan it in time buckets. Can you walk us through how we can go about planning how much money we should be spending and saving at different points in our lives?
The concept of time buckets is a lot of people have this idea that I have a bucket list. Before I die, I want to go do this. So they think like, oh, I'm going to turn 80 and it's coming and they're going to run around the globe and do these activities and be fulfilled. And it just doesn't work that way. As we were talking before, a lot of these activities or things that may fulfill you for the average person, you will either not be able to do them, not enjoy doing them. Your attitude is completely changed. You don't want to do them anymore. At a certain age, going raving at the club just isn't fun anymore. I don't know why. You just get old. It happens to us, right? At a certain age, hiking the Himalayas, you don't have the ability to do it. And then certain experiences are meant for that time period in your life. And so the when you do it is as important as what you do, right? In order to get the maximum fulfillment. And so there are activities and experiences that are meant for your 20s, for the first job you, single you. And there are certain experiences for senior manager, starting your own company you, got married, have young kids you, right? And then your experiences are for empty nester you, kids off to college you. And each period, some of the experiences that are meant for your 20s are either hard to transfer into your 30s, don't make sense anymore. Like me going to youth hostels and raging through Europe doesn't make sense right now.
Yeah.
At my age, right? Like I missed the boat. and some of the experience in your 30s actually probably are best done in your 30s, not in your 20s. Like going to a classical music symphony in my 20s, I wasn't mature enough to go sit through it and enjoy it and appreciate it. Now I am. But me in my late 30s, actually, I still like to rage. Going raging and glow sticking, you know, right? Like all night is probably best in my 20s when I can still get up, wake up and be like, no problem. Now, if I go raging all night and get up, I'm dead for the day, you know, day and a half. You know, a lot of people think, oh, before I die, they need to think that you die a lot of mini deaths. The 20s you dies, right? The singles you dies. The young person about to graduate college dies. The person who had small toddlers, that person dies. And then the new person comes in. And so if we optimize for each period, what experiences belong where, when we look at the total of our life, we'll have a much more optimized and fulfilled life as opposed to somebody at the end of this vacation here on planet Earth, right? We come down, we gain consciousness here on planet Earth. We have about a 80-year ride, right? 80, 86-year ride. At the end of that vacation, running around like, oh my God, I didn't do this. You know, and somebody's like, well, I can't do this. These are the two things I can do. And what you come to find out is, you know, most people, the data is very, very clear on this, very clear in all wealth management, all kinds of studies, is that as people get older, even adjusting for healthcare costs, they spend less money. And I get asked the question, why? And I was like, because they can't. They don't have the attitude or the aptitude to spend money. They want to hang out with their grandchildren. They want to visit with their friends. They want to talk about the old days. They are not about zipping around the planet and going to a bunch of concerts and ripping around. Like, that is not their life. In general, I'm generalizing. Obviously, there are exceptions to every generalization, but I'm saying the number of activities, the things they do that cost money tends to go down and they lead a less active, more sedentary life. Making sure those activities go in the right time bucket will help you have less regret for that time period.
We'll be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Young and Profiters, we are all making money. But is your money hustling for you? Meaning, are you investing? Putting your savings in the bank is just doing you a total disservice. You got to beat inflation. I've been investing heavily for years. I've got an E-Trade account. I've got a Robinhood account. And it used to be such a pain to manage all of my accounts. I'd hop from platform to platform. I'd always forget my Fidelity password, and then I have to reset my password. I knew that needed to change because I need to keep track of all my stuff. Everything got better once I started using Yahoo Finance, the sponsor of today's episode. You can securely link up all of your investment accounts in Yahoo Finance for one unified view of your wealth. They've got stock analyst ratings. They have independent research. I can customize charts and choose what metrics I want to display for all my stocks so I can make the best decisions. I can even dig into financial statements and balance sheets of the companies that I'm curious about. Whether you're a seasoned investor or looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Young and Profiters, Yap Media is growing so fast. I have 10 open roles just this month. In the past, it would take me so long to find hires. I have to go on all these different job sites. I have to create my own skills assessments. That's why I let Indeed do a lot of this heavy lifting for me. Indeed is the powerful hiring platform where I can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Indeed has things like skills assessments, where when we have specific roles, we can find an assessment that matches that role and we can make sure they have the skills that we need. Then I can focus on culture fit. I can make sure they're scrappy enough and are obsessed with excellence and do all the things that we need to do for them to fit in at Yap. And Indeed streamlines hiring with powerful tools like Instant Match. And Instant Match basically matches you with candidates as soon as you put up a job post with people who are qualified right away. It's instant. And the best part is it gets better as you use it. So now when I use Indeed, especially when I'm hiring for similar roles, I get people right away where they know that I'm going to like the candidates because they can see what my preferences were in the past. It gets better as you use it. According to US Indeed data, the moment Indeed sponsors a job, over 80% of employers get candidates whose resumes are a perfect match for the position. It's like waving a magic wand that gets better as you use it. So I love using Indeed. We've found a lot of our A players on there. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide who count on Indeed to hire their next superstar like we do at Yap Media. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/profiting. Offer is good for a limited time. Claim your $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/profiting. Again, that's Indeed.com/profiting. And support the show by saying you heard about it on Young and Profiting podcast. Again, it's Indeed.com/profiting to get your $75 credit. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. You've got this fear of not living life to the fullest, but a lot of people have the fear of dying broke, especially people who don't make a lot of money. They think, oh, but I need to make sure that I'm not going to be 90 years old and still have to work my whatever job, because it's hard to see the light when you don't make a lot of money, I think. So like you just get into this mindset of saving so that when I'm 80 or 90, I can survive. What would you say to those people who have that fear?
Well, I'd say, listen, there's ways to mitigate those fears, annuities, savings programs, et cetera, so you save too much. But I would want them to take the mindset another way, because this is about optimizing your life for fulfillment. That doesn't necessarily mean these are activities with money. Remember I said the young you with toddlers dies and then they're empty nesters? Here's a very simple example for me that, you know, I'm divorced. And one of the things was an argument is like, who drives the kids to school? No, I'm not driving. You know, kids always want to get driven around to their friends, et cetera. And then I realized that the time, the quality time, the conversations I get with my kids is when they're in the car. They're trapped with me. They're stuck with their dad. And then I realized this is the time bucket to be driving them around, because you won't get that time ever again. And so instead of it being an argument of who's driving the kids, I would go out of my way to pick them up to be the Uber driver. I became one of the best Uber drivers there was, just so I can get the time with the kids, because this is the time to optimize with my daughters and get those stories, overhear the conversations, learn what's going on in their life when they're forced to talk to me. 75% of the time you will ever spend with your kid is done by, I think, by the age 13 or 14 in the US. I learned that a little bit late. That's a sobering statistic of like what activities belong when. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, hey, I'm gonna go to the bar and drink with my friends and hang out, whatever, or hang out and watch a kids movie with my kids, this is the Die with Zero philosophy about allocating your resources. Like, how do I allocate my time in order to get the most fulfilling? So it doesn't always have to be about that money and that savings aspect. And the other thing I would say to them about that fear is, I naturally have the fear of wasting my life, but you can train yourself to shift your fears. You know, shift your fear from running out of money to not living a full life. And if you have some skill sets, that strong of an ego, there's many jobs you can do just to survive. Zero is really, really hard to get to. Like, I can always go be a waiter. I can always sweep floors. I can always be the guy that holds a sign on the highway. There's lots of things, and I have very low ego associated with it. Like, I don't care about what people think before I care about me and my fulfillment. And so I'm willing to just flip the sign. So if you have that mentality of, I am not afraid of failure or the perception of this big fall that I have to work, you can now start allocating resources more to fulfilling things in the right time bucket. And I'm not saying that risk doesn't exist, but realize that the first safety net is you, and then there's, you know, government and Social Security. But you have these abilities to either mitigate these risks or mitigate your ego. I think a lot of people who don't start businesses or take these risks with these jobs, it's not really that they can't take the financial shock. They can. They're intelligent people. They can get a job. What they're really worried about is looking like an idiot, or they're fools, or the fear of failure. That's what really shackles people. And so I think fear of running out of money is another version of fear of failure. And it's not that they can't take that shock or get that job or wait tables or whatever, and not saying it won't be hard. It's just that their egos are very, very attached to not having that happen to them. It's the judgment of other people, which they fear more than actually running out of the money.
Yeah, totally. one of the things that you keep mentioning is this fear of not spending enough time with your kids or allocating your time in a way where in the future you might regret not spending enough time with your kids. So what are your thoughts about people having kids so much later in life these days?
I think it's an interesting dynamic. I think people, it's supposed to be values agnostic. So if that is your value and that's what you want to do, the only thing I ask of my friends or people is think about how you allocate your resources and how does that fit. So if you're like, I want to have kids later in life because I'm going to do X, Y, and Z and travel and whatever, I'm like, okay, make sure you do it, right? It does create this flip-flop, right? Like usually people were having kids in their 20s, early, you know, it was 16, 17, 18, 20s now, like 30s, who knows where it's going, right? With technology. What it does do is force you to think about what activities you're doing and when and why are you shifting this later? Are you getting forced to shift it later? Are you choosing to shift it later? I don't have any problems with it. I just want people to actually be deliberate and intentional on their processes and how they're thinking about it so they can have a more fulfilling life for them and their kids. And I use my kids because that's my values. There's single people out there. They have different values. They're like, you know, I want to go to all the strip clubs in the world. I'm like, okay, this is the time for you to go to strip clubs. I want to do charity work. I want to go, okay, what is the time period? What is the best time period for you to do that in the arc of your life based on what experiences you want to have and to think that through? And that's why time bucketing is so important, is to really get an idea of what does your life look like loosely, right? It's going to change. This is not you figure it out and you leave it and that's it. You have to come back to it often. But what does that look like? And how do I optimize those periods? You know, if you're going to have a kid in your late 30s, 40s, 50s, there's no problems with that. I have no qualms with that. It's just be intentional so that both you and your family can have the most fulfilling version of whatever your values are.
And you said it, be intentional. I feel like whenever we're intentional, we think, we plan, we step back, then you're making good decisions in your life. You're acting in a way that's going to benefit your future self and what you really want, and so that you can live without regrets.
What are the KPIs of fulfillment for you for each period of your life? Your 20s, like for you, it might be grow my podcast, get famous, hang out, travel with my boyfriend, blah, blah, blah. And the KPIs would be, how many trips have I taken? How many I love yous have I said? How many podcasts and interesting people have you? Like, I'm just making them up for you right now. I have no clue. Visiting his family. How many times did we visit his family? How many times did we visit my family? How many, you know, walks did we go on? How many hikes did we go on? Like, you can make the KPIs whatever you want the KPIs to be, but doing that gives you the same metrics, feedback, and intentionality that you do in your job when they're all there, right?
I was just going to say, with your career, we often think about, okay, I want to make this much money. I want to have this title. I want to do this. But you don't think about your personal life and all the things that you want to do and accomplish, all the milestones in your personal life.
Which to me is insane. It's insane because to me, work is a tool to have the fulfilling life. And so the KPIs of my life are way, 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 way more important than the other things. Like this, yes, this enables this. I can still grind through and not have these KPIs, but not having the feedback on my life about, am I living my life right according to my values, according to my wishes and wants, is insanity.
Well, Bill, this has been an incredible conversation. I always close my interview out with two last questions that I ask all my guests. The first one is, what is one actionable thing that our young and profiters can do today to become more profitable tomorrow?
I would say develop habits. Figure out what are the habits of a successful person, whatever your goal is, develop those habits and repeat, 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 repeat. So develop the habits. And you don't develop habits by like saying, hey, I'm going to run a marathon in one shot. There's a book, literally, How to Run a Marathon. It's like you run this much, then you run a little bit more, then you run a little bit more. And eventually, through consistency, you get there. And so I would say, develop the habits of a successful person.
And what would you say is your secret to profiting in life? And this is all aspects of life besides just business and money.
Vulnerability. I think that is the number one key, to be vulnerable with yourself and being vulnerable with others. That deepens your relationships, both personal and professional, which will enrich you and fulfill your life in ways you couldn't imagine.
And where can everybody learn more about you and get your new book, Die with Zero?
Well, Die with Zero, I think it's everywhere. I think it's in 8 languages. Wherever bookstores are, local bookstores, the major outlets, Barnes & Nobles, et cetera. I don't know if you even want to follow me. I have crazy thoughts. I spew a stream of consciousness on Twitter. I'm at BP22 on Twitter, but I don't recommend it. I don't recommend it.
Now everyone's going to go follow you on Twitter.
Be like, why did I listen to the stream of consciousness over here? But that's where you can find me. And I'm on Instagram. I'm Bill Perkins. If you like my own personal diary, if you like to spy on other people's lives.
Amazing. Well, we'll put all those links in the show notes so our listeners can find you and follow you. And thank you so much for joining us on Young and Profiting Podcast.
Thanks. It was great to be here.
You know, Young and Profiters, we hear about the importance of saving over and over again. But how often do we think about how we might be saving ourselves outside of a life? Bill Perkins is not afraid of dying broke. Instead, he's afraid of dying without having really lived his life. Extreme frugality is robbing us of our chance to live our lives to the fullest. But the solution isn't to just start spending like crazy, but rather to start optimizing for a full life. There were so many good nuggets in this episode, but something Bill said that really struck me and stuck with me was how nobody says they want to make $1 billion by the age of 90. We know that by that age, our bodies are much weaker and our lives have passed us by. So money really at that age has less utility. We can't just go on any trip we want to do. We can't do whatever we want because our bodies are fragile and weak at that age. And so if you wait until you're old and gray before you go buy your dream house, you might not be able to climb up the stairs and enjoy the house. That's why for Bill, it makes no sense to simply keep accumulating money for your golden years. You are exchanging hours of your life for money, and you shouldn't be giving up all that time to then have no reward. You shouldn't be stealing from your younger self, who needs more money, than from your older self down the line, who doesn't need as much money. You deserve to enjoy today what you've worked hard and saved for. And Bill asked a question that we all need to ask ourselves. What are the KPIs of fulfillment for you for each period of your life? And this was my favorite piece of advice in the episode. Break down your life in buckets. What you need at 20 is different from what you need at 30, is different from what you need at 40, 50, 60, and so on. You probably need more money to function in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s than you do in your 70s, 80s, and 90s because you can do more things. And you've got to think about what do you want at each stage of your life? What are the KPIs of fulfillment at each stage of your life? Because like Bill said, it doesn't make sense to party in Europe in your 30s. You're going to embarrass yourself. You better make sure you're planning to do that in your 20s if you are still in your 20s. Every stage of life has different things that we're going to want to do and can do. And so we've got to think that through. And the KPIs are up to you. So for example, are your KPIs the number of famous people you've taken pictures with or the number of trips you've taken with your partner? Your KPIs don't have to be specifically about the amount of money. It's about what you want to do and how much that's going to cost. Money is not the goal. It's the tool to drive fulfillment. Thanks for listening to this episode of Young and Profiting Podcast. Here at Yap, we're all about accumulating experiences and insights and helping others do the same. So if you listened, learned, and profited from this conversation with the impressive Bill Perkins, please share this episode with your friends and family. If you enjoyed the show, the number one way to thank us is by writing a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. I read these reviews every day and would love to hear your feedback about the show. And if you prefer to watch your podcast as videos, you can find all of our episodes uploaded to YouTube. Just look up Young and Profiting and you'll find all of our episodes on there. You can also find me on Instagram at YapWithHala or LinkedIn by searching my name. It's Hala Taha. I also wanted to take a moment to say thank you to my incredible Yap production team. You guys are rock stars. You are best in the business. Thank you for all that you do. This is your host, Hala Taha, aka the Podcast Princess, signing off.